There are many approaches to defeating cancer. Unfortunately, there are also very many different types of cancer, and each of them present their own unique challenges for treatment and research. A particular kind of leukemia, blood cancer, called AML, gets its own Beat AML team at the Knight Cancer Center at Oregon Health Sciences University in Portland. The Beat AML team is looking into a genetic approach that shows some promise. The resequencing of genes, of genes to provide the keys to treatment. We have two guests with us. Dr. Jeff Tyner, PhD, is assistant professor at OHSU in the Department of Cell and Developmental Biology. Dr. Tyner, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
We also have with us Ellie Traer, MD, oncologist and hematologist at OHSU.
Hi, thank you.
Good to have you both here. Dr. Traer, let's start with you. Would you walk us into it slowly? What is AML?
So AML is short for acute myeloid leukemia, which is just a certain type of leukemia. And it comes from the cells that eventually are supposed to form the white blood cells that fight infection in the body. But, of course, they become abnormal and continue to grow and eventually take over the bone marrow, which leads to the disease and all the sort of deleterious side effects.
Does it basically make the body unable to defend itself?
It does. That's one of the things that it does, and certainly one of the most dangerous in terms of treating AML. And it also causes people to be profoundly fatigued because without normal red blood cell production, they become very tired. So usually that's how people present. Is either with infection or close to infection and very fatigued and exhausted.
Is it often mistaken for other things like chronic fatigue syndrome or anything else, really?
Well, it can be a little tricky in the beginning. So it's a little bit, sort of as it's in development, it actually can be quite hard to pick up unless you're looking for it. At some point, though, it usually becomes very obvious in the labs because the leukemia grows in the bone marrow, which is where the normal white cells, red cells, and platelets are all created. So when that happens and it gets to be, the burden is large enough in the bone marrow, all of those lineages go down. So usually a lab test is very abnormal at some point.
Dr. Jeff Tyner, I noticed that you worked not only with AML but also with ALL. So obviously we're talking several different kinds of leukemia. Is there anything about AML that makes it trickier than other kinds?
There's not been a whole lot of new therapies that have been brought for AML patients over the last decade. And so the prognosis for our AML patients really hasn't changed for quite some time. And so our view is in the Beat AML consortium that we need to have a better understanding of the genetics and the biology that drives this disease, and that will allow us to bring new gene-targeted therapies to patients, which we expect will improve outcomes for these patients.
Dr. Traer, how is AML treated now? What's the general medical approach to AML?
Well, as Dr. Tyner was indicating, we haven't really changed our treatment in many years. In fact, for over 35 years, we've been using the same chemotherapy regimens in general for AML. And so it consists of a very intensive chemotherapy called an induction phase that we do, and that usually can get rid of a lot of the leukemia. But then after that, patients need to get either more chemotherapy or a bone marrow transplant to control the disease, because it is very resistant to therapy in general.
Is there a particular percentage of patients that usually end up getting the bone marrow transplant?
So the survival is about 50% for all AML patients. And so usually we sort of separate AML into different risk categories. So there's the types of AML that tend to respond to chemotherapy, and sometimes that's all we use. And then there's the higher-risk AML that does not respond to chemotherapy, and that's where you have to use a bone marrow transplant, which is really giving a patient a new immune system, and then the immune system actually sort of attacks the leukemia for you.
In the cases of bone marrow transplants, the process itself has been done many times now, I know, but I mean, how difficult is it to find a match so that you can get bone marrow that will actually work in the patient?
Yeah, we've gotten a lot better at finding matches. Now, it used to be we used to do transplants mostly using siblings because that was the best chance of getting a good match. But with more genetic resolution of the surface markers of the cell, you can actually find good matches for most individuals. It depends a little bit upon their sort of background and ethnicity, but in general, about 75% of the time we can find somebody.
We're talking to Drs. Jeff Tyner and Ellie Traer at Oregon Health Sciences University about the process they're working on to beat AML, acute myeloid leukemia. There's a whole Beat AML team up there that they are part of. You can join us on the exchange as we talk about this process of gene resequencing. And the number's here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Jeff Tyner, is the key to any cancer treatment disrupting the cancer, making it difficult for the cancer to grow?
Yes, that's absolutely right. And you know, that's what most standard chemotherapy drugs do. The only problem is that those chemotherapy drugs also target most other cells in the body that are growing and makes it hard for those other cells to grow. And so the view of the Beat AML project, and really most people who are doing cancer research these days, is that we need to find genetic targets that are more unique to the tumor, to the tumor cells. And then we can, once we found those targets, we can identify drugs that very specifically go after those tumor-specific targets in a way that will leave other cells in the body unharmed. And there's been some very good examples of this in other types of cancer. Unfortunately, in AML, there's not a whole lot of examples, excuse me, of gene-targeted therapies that have been successfully used, and that's partly because there's an awful lot of different gene targets that are present across the spectrum of AML patients.
All right, so just generally on chemo, though, it really beats up on cells, but it beats up on cancer cells a little harder, but it sounds like everything in the body takes a beating with chemotherapy.
Yeah, that's right.
And so when you talk about the targets that you're trying to find, can you work that out a little for us in lay language?
Sure. There's really been a revolution of DNA resequencing, as you've mentioned, over the last decade. 10 years ago, it would have been virtually impossible for someone to sequence a whole genome, and it would have cost billions of dollars. Over the last 10 years, it's become possible to not only sequence a genome within a fairly short period of time, a few weeks. It's also costing only a few $1,000s now. It will eventually drop to a few $100s. This gives us an enormously powerful new tool to understand what mutations are residing within individual patients' tumor cells. And once we've understood the mutations, the mutant genes that are causing this abnormal growth of the cells, we can then design drugs that very specifically attack those genes which encode for enzymes, enzymes within cells that regulate the growth of the cells. And then we can design drugs that are very specifically inhibiting the activity of these enzymes and therefore will specifically target the tumor cells and leave normal cells unharmed.
So essentially more of a laser beam approach than a meat-axe approach?
Exactly.
All right. Well, does that differ from patient to patient, though? I mean, is AML's genetic makeup similar that similar in patient to patient, or can it be very different in the way that it uses the body's cells?
It's very different, and that's one of the major challenges. It's very clear that AML is not one disease. In fact, it's already defined as about 20 different diseases, as Dr. Traer was alluding. And as we begin to bring the greater resolution of the specific genetic mutations that are occurring in one patient or another, it's going to become hundreds, probably thousands of different diseases. And so we're going to need a lot of different therapeutic approaches that will need to be tailored individually to specific patients based on the genetic makeup of that particular tumor that's growing in an individual patient.
One thing I did not ask of Dr. Traer was what the numbers are of people in the population who have AML. I mean, how many cases pop up each year?
So it's not the most common disease, but it is one of the more deadly diseases. So there's about 20,000 cases a year in the United States, roughly speaking. So again, in terms of the numbers of cancers, it's on the lower end, but because of the sort of the acuity with which it presents, I mean, it's sort of an emergency when people are diagnosed with it. And because of the mortality, it does get a little bit more attention, certainly from physicians.
Well, given the population distribution, that if there are 20,000 cases across the country, in your corner of the country, do you see, what, a handful of cases at OHSU each year, or is it more than that?
Oh, and that's 20,000 per year. So we end up seeing, I think, about 100 new cases of AML a year here.
Right there at OHSU.
Yeah.
All right. So back to Jeff Tyner. When we're talking about the process of trying to design therapies based on gene resequencing, it sounds like this gets unbelievably complicated.
Well, it is, and especially because we're very aware that single-agent targeted therapies are likely not going to be the solution for AML. We're almost certainly going to need combinations of therapies for every patient. And so this is where the Beat AML Consortium comes in. We've put together a team of academic medical centers across the country, as well as technology partners such as Intel and pharmaceutical partners. And the objective of this consortium, I should also mention, it's really a collaboration with the Leukemia Lymphoma Society, who is funding a large portion of the work. The objective of this consortium is to study upwards of specimens from upwards of 1,000 AML patients over the next few years to sequence the whole genomes of these tumor cells, to perform drug sensitivity studies to understand which drugs and which cocktails of drugs might be effective in killing the tumor cells from any individual patient, and then to use computational approaches that were assisted by people like Intel to integrate these data sets and understand if a patient presents with a specific genotype of their tumor, if they have specific composite of mutant genes that are driving their leukemia cell growth, we can then understand that there is a specific set of drugs that patient would likely benefit from, and ultimately develop clinical trials to test these drug combinations and hopefully show that, in fact, they are having a beneficial effect on the clinical outcome of the patients.
So ultimately, you could potentially come up with, I don't know, 5 drugs, a dozen drugs or something, and figure out for each patient which combination of drugs makes up their particular cocktail?
That's exactly right. And, we probably will need a dozen or dozens of drugs. We probably won't hopefully need thousands of drugs, because we can annotate these thousands of different genotypes into certain commonalities, certain pathways that might be commonly targeted by individual drugs. But we are certainly going to need multiple drugs and multiple drug cocktails to get this work done.
Well, there obviously have been gains in technology and gene sequencing, and I think you've alluded to these already, but, I mean, how far has the ability to do what you're doing now advanced over the years? Are there things you're doing now you couldn't have done 5 years ago, 10 years ago?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So, 10 years ago, it was just logistically impossible to sequence an entire genome. It would have taken 6 million individual test tube reactions to do it and cost billions of dollars. There was a new technology involved that essentially miniaturized the process and brought to bear some very complex computational solutions. And that all of a sudden made it possible to sequence a genome within a few weeks. It still cost about $1 million 6 or 7 years ago. But then the speed of this technology has accelerated, the efficiency has accelerated to the point that it's only a few thousand dollars now. So it's really a revolution in terms of the amount of information we can collect in a very short period of time. And this information is critical to being able to understand why a particular person has leukemia, what the genetic targets might be in any individual patient, and therefore can inform us about drugs that patient may benefit from.
The number is still staggering. It was $1 million to sequence the genome in 2008, and about $5,000 today.
That's about right. Yeah, it has the efficiency of DNA sequencing has outpaced Moore's law, which is the law that governs the increase in computer processing speeds. And of course, that's a very impressive statistic in and of itself, and even more impressive that DNA sequencing efficiency has outpaced that standard.
We're talking to Dr. Jeff Tyner, Dr. Ellie Trier. Dr. Tyner is an assistant professor at OHSU, Oregon Health Sciences University, in the Department of Cell and Developmental Biology. Dr. Ellie Trier, MD, is an oncologist and hematologist. They are both involved in the battle against AML, acute myeloid leukemia, and we're hearing about the process of gene resequencing as promise to perhaps better treatments down the road. Join us on The Exchange with your questions and comments, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Dr. Trier, we were talking about the numbers of cases, 20,000 new ones across the country every year, and maybe 100 or so at OHSU. Do people come to OHSU from far and wide to make use of the treatments available there?
So they do, and a lot of them come from the state of Oregon, from sort of southern Oregon and eastern parts of the state. We do have some patients who come from Montana and Idaho occasionally. It sort of depends on how quickly they get diagnosed with leukemia. So a lot of patients, they're basically so sick they have to be taken care of where they first present. But we do work with a lot of hospitals around the state to help transition their care here if that's what the patients wish.
The process must be interesting and I'm sure at least a little heartbreaking in the sense that you're on one hand treating people on a daily basis with what you have now, and on the other hand trying to research what you could have down the road many years away.
Oh, it's very hard because there's a lot of patients that you become attached to, and you know they have, sometimes we know they have specific genetic lesions that they're working on drugs for, and you know that probably in 2 or 3 years we'll have better approaches for treating these patients, but we just don't have them now. So it's really hard to see people and know that you don't have a good treatment for them, but one probably is on the way. On the other hand, it's no better inspiration than to go through that experience to have you go back and work harder in the lab to try to make that a reality.
And what kinds of hours do you guys end up working on the research part of things?
Well, it's a pretty continuous process. We certainly don't do all of it. It's quite a large team, and Jeff Tyner sort of oversees a lot of people. But we almost have to work like a hospital in terms of processing the samples because, of course, patients get leukemia 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So even the research team is on call and can come in and handle patient samples if they come in.
Jeff Tyner, you mentioned Intel being involved in the BEAT AML consortium, AML being acute myeloid leukemia. How is Intel involved in this?
Intel is playing a couple of very critical roles in this process. As we've already discussed, there's enormous quantities of data being generated by this resequencing of DNA. And Intel is very interested in assisting us and everyone else in accelerating the computational side of the equation. So we can generate a lot of data in the wet lab. There's a huge amount of processing time that is required to analyze all of that data. And so Intel, of course, one of the things they excel at is chip design and increasing the efficiency of computer processing. And so they're designing new generations of computer chips to be able to handle all of these data. The other thing that Intel is really helping us with is the problem of integrating the huge amounts of DNA resequencing information with the drug sensitivity information that we've talked about. Those are very different types of data sets, very different types of information. And so they're helping us with new algorithms, new software solutions that can help us to integrate those two pieces of information.
And you mentioned the wet lab. What is the wet lab?
The wet lab is where we do all of the DNA resequencing, all of the in vitro drug, all of the drug sensitivity studies. This is the research team that Dr. Traer was mentioning. We've got a terrific and large group of people that are very dedicated and are, as Dr. Traer mentioned, working 24/7, receiving specimens from patients as the patients are diagnosed and generating all of these data sets that are going to be critical for understanding new therapies for these patients.
Have there been, Dr. Tyner, any eureka moments so far, any things where you went, hey, this looks this is really going to work, or is it really just an incremental step-by-step, okay, we know more than we did yesterday kind of thing?
Well, it's a little bit of both. I mean, there are eureka moments, but they aren't eureka in terms of we found the cure for all AML patients. As we've already talked about, this is thousands of different diseases, so there are eureka moments where we say, hey, we've found something that's going to be really effective for a few percentage of AML patients. And that's the way we're going to have to tackle this disease is a few percent at a time, you know, one gene at a time, one drug at a time. And ultimately, if you start adding up 1% here, 2% there, you get a large percentage. And so there are definitely eureka moments, but at the same time, it is also an incremental process.
And it is obviously too much to hope for that you'd end up with one drug that would make sure that everybody with AML just had their symptoms suddenly arrest.
Yeah, well, that would be wonderful, but I think unfortunately it is too much to hope for.
So the pharmaceutical folks standing by, are they doing any research of their own up to this point? I mean, can they take what you've got now and begin to develop drugs based on the information that you have, or do they have to wait for further interpretations of the data?
They're very active. They have huge arsenals of drugs that they've already developed, some of which are already approved, many of which are already in clinical trials for other indications. And so really what we're doing is helping the pharmaceutical companies to identify which subsets of patients, which groups of patients are going to benefit from these drugs that already exist, repurposing of drugs that already exist. There may be some there will be some activity in terms of here's a new target, we need a new drug for this target. But in many cases, the drugs already exist, and they're actually being underutilized simply because we haven't had the information to understand which patients would most benefit from these existing drugs.
Dr. Eli Traer, back to the clinical level then, it sounds like we could still end up emerging with a fairly expensive treatment regime here. I don't know what the cost is of chemotherapy that's currently used to treat AML patients, but, I mean, are there issues that, with people being able to get insurance coverage for their conditions?
Well, cost is definitely an issue, and it is the insurance can be quite difficult sometimes, although thus far we haven't had too many problems with it. But sometimes even the most effective drugs are actually quite expensive, and even if they've been around for a long time, partly because it may not apply to a large number of patients, since we are just dealing with a few numbers of a small percentage of AML patients for each disease, and one of these examples is something like acute promyelocytic leukemia, where there's a retinoic acid derivative that's very specific for this disease, and it works very well. It's actually made it quite a curable disease. But that can be very expensive because they don't make very much of it. It's just a rare disease. So it is a challenge, and I think any new drug tends to come with a large cost. So it's always a challenge being able to translate that to patients. But it's most important to really sort of shoot for the cure, shoot for the moon, and then we'll figure out the best way to pay for it. And I think drug companies will have, they're going to be invested in this as well, because really this is how they continue to exist, is by creating new drugs.
All right. Eli Traer and Jeff Tyner at Oregon Health Sciences University, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having us.